Support for Jazzed About Work comes from Ohio University's online master's degree in sustainability, security, and resilience. Does your organization or community have a workable plan for when a catastrophe strikes? This 18-month online degree program will give you the skills you need to prepare for, respond to, and recover from natural disasters and other crises. Participants earn 3 stackable certificates in community risk and resilience, change management and leadership, and planning resilient systems, leading to a full master's degree. Students learn cutting-edge skills in sustainability assessment and entrepreneurship, sustainable agriculture, energy policy, and more. This is an exciting, growing field, and no GRE test is required to apply. For more information, follow the link in the description on this podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones. I'm an executive coach and an author, and my latest book is Find Your Happy at Work. Our guest today, Joan Lynch, is one of our favorite experts on work opportunities. Joan is the head of all video and other content at WorkNation. That's an innovative media company that creates educational and inspiring stories about everything related to jobs. Today, Joan will discuss the state of employment in rural areas. For years, communities in the countryside have struggled with an aging population and a shortage of job opportunities. But there are signs that that situation may be changing. Joan also will mention work trends for sectors that have special challenges, including neurodivergent and disabled communities. And she'll talk about veterans who are entering the civilian workforce and also about women who've been slow to return to work after the pandemic, but there's some programs that may help them that are emerging. Also, Joan will touch on industries that are likely to be hiring in 2024. And we'll explore how, now more than ever, workers want jobs where there's a chance to keep on learning. And it does seem that some employers are getting that message. Joan, welcome back to Jazzed About Work. We always love having you here, and I always feel like I'm up to the minute after we've had a chance to talk for a while.
No, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
So a lot seems to have changed. We speak about once a year, it seems like, and I'm always wondering, is there going to be enough new? And then when I start digging into your website and thinking about the folks I've been talking with, I'm surprised at how much has changed in the work scene in just a year. But one of the things I've been particularly interested in, I think it's partly because I now live in a rural area, is that things may be changing when it gets to rural employment. And I've seen some things on your website. What are you thinking about how jobs are looking after many tough years in the countryside?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we've found from just the reaction to some of our articles and podcasts that it's a topic that a lot of Americans are really interested in. It's an area, you know, the rural population of this country is 46 million people. It makes up, 14% of our population. And a lot of really important things come out, agriculture and others come out of that region. But there's a lot of challenges faced by the population there. So it's a hot topic. It's something that we really want to dig into. We're going to do a big event and an hour-long show just on this topic later this year. But, you know, obviously rural isn't just about farming. There's manufacturing, there's construction, healthcare, education. But every different community in different states has different needs. And I would say this isn't new, but it is, it still continues to boggle my mind that you can't talk about rural issues without talking about the biggest factor, which is the digital divide.
Absolutely.
And, you know, COVID, as I think we've talked about in past years or during the year of COVID, really opened a lot of people's eyes to that when you saw it on the news and people were just talking about, you know, stay home, work from home. And they weren't really taking into account 42 million Americans that have no access to broadband. That's a massive number of people. So how do you run a business if you don't have access to broadband? And you know, if you don't run a business, you don't hire people. So we are, Working Nation, we always go back to talking about jobs and talking about careers. So, you know, I'll mention farmers, although they're, people assume that when we talk rural, we talk farmers, but, you know, I know you and I both read an article recently that a report came out from the Benton Institute of Broadband Society that looked across 15 agricultural counties in Illinois and talked about what faster internet could do for farmers in terms of boosting their production by, I think they said it was 100 million annually. So
it's amazing how many opportunities there are to use AI and everything else that needs broadband in the business, in the work of farming, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's, you know, ag tech and all of these amazing things that are coming out of a lot of these new schools and what they call precision agriculture. It's amazing what we can do, and it changes the lives of these farmers and it makes them more productive. You know, they can see their land with different drones in different ways instead of going out and driving around. And that's all lovely. But if you don't have access to broadband, how do you access this technology? So, you know, so the digital divide is massive. And I would say even something as simple that, you know, a lot of people don't take into account, but for job seekers, we take for granted, you know, how do you do a job interview on Zoom without high-speed internet? Or, you know, there's a lot of companies that said, you know, we're really going to invest in our rural workforce. We're going to give them the opportunity to have remote jobs. Well, they can't hire these folks to have remote jobs if they don't have access to this technology. So, you know, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of good intention out there. But when we talk about equity and access for all, technology has to be a part of that conversation. And I know the government is doing a lot with the infrastructure bill. They're trying to work as fast as they can to get people access to this. But you know me, Bev, I always try to be positive and say, like, as that access comes, then things like strategic partnerships come into effect. So the federal government gives money to these folks, they get online faster, local leaders prepare, you know, the community, companies can move in or hire these people remotely, training programs can get in place. So you have an equation that can change an entire community and region. And we've told a lot of stories, you know, specifically one in Colorado, there's a lot of great stories in the Tulsa area where there's some really great thought leaders and programs in place that are trying to make this happen faster.
Well, it is happening at different paces all over the country, but there is a lot going on. But even aside from the massive impact on agriculture, there are other ways that it looks like, at least in some areas, we're starting to see some changes. One of the problems has been that there have been no jobs for young people, so they leave. And then when a business wants to come in, they can't hire kind of young workers. But that is starting to change a little bit in some areas, because even if a community only has Wi-Fi in some places, those places are places where people can work remotely, and some folks are coming back to where they grew up, or other folks just want to get out of the city. So we're starting to see it in, like, it's like patchwork all over the country, I think.
I think that's right. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the point about the younger workers. And, you know, this is also something that happened during COVID. And for years, we've known as factories were shutting down, communities were getting hit, that people were trying to make their way to places with opportunity to be able to have careers and provide for their families. So, you know, as younger people did take up more of that opportunity, and we have an aging population, you know, which is something we love to talk about at Working Nation, although our editor-in-chief, Ramona Schindelheim, loves, when I say older workers, which is what is referred to in a lot of the research, she likes to call them mid-career workers. So I do think that that sounds a lot more positive. But there are a lot of people that are still looking for work or coming back. There's a lot of programs now through the federal government where they're trying to bring in, you know, chip building factories and that type of thing into some of these communities to provide opportunities. But there's great opportunities for people of all ages and skill levels to get into these jobs if we can make this happen. And one of the specific examples that we highlighted recently, which I loved, was the Workforce Opportunity for Rural Communities, which is a mouthful, but they grant funds to the workforce training in Appalachia, the lower Mississippi Delta, and I think the northern border regions, but they fund programs that are created, but they have to be in collaboration with community partners and aligned with existing like economic development plans and strategies. So it's fine to drop these opportunities in there, but they have to be in partnership with the workforce development teams so that they can get these people trained for the jobs that are there or coming.
That makes a lot of sense. It's good to hear about programs like this that are kind of addressing what the issues are and structuring something that requires the communities to be part of the action so that the fit is right. Yeah. Well, you mentioned some people who've been slow to return to work. So this, aside from rural areas, another trend that we've been watching, I think, over the years since the height of COVID, I guess, and that's the impact on women. After a good bit of time, it seems like women have still been slower in getting back to work since the pandemic. Partly, of course, is that it's hard to get childcare. What are you noticing about women in work these days?
Yeah, it's a great point. And it was devastating to women because in terms of workforce participation, we were just getting to levels that were more equal, and in some cases, in some sectors, higher. Women were employed at higher numbers. We were just getting there when COVID hit, and you're right. Childcare played a big role in that, and you know, so did access to, you know, not everybody has four computers at home, so both parents can work and the kids can go to school. It was a very complicated and scary time for a lot of families in this country. And I want to be very clear there. We've heard many cases where men left the workforce, but the numbers in terms of women leaving the workforce was extreme, and it's going to take us a while to come back from that. And it's interesting because we've spent the last year telling a lot of these stories, and I want to give you two examples because I think we always try to point to solutions to some of this, but single moms in general have real hurdles to overcome. And, you know, in talking to Melissa Panzer, who's our executive producer, who just produced four short documentaries about single moms in community colleges, you know, we talked about what the real challenge is for these women, and single fathers too, but for these women, the pieces were about women. And it's what we call time poverty. So these women have to juggle the work, the childcare, transportation, and then attempt school, completing assignments. It's mind-boggling. These four pieces really opened our eyes to what these women are dealing with. And again, there's the growth is slow for that particular area in terms of single women and community colleges. And there's a couple of interesting points about that. And one is that colleges and universities have been really slow to collect data about their student bodies, specifically with regards to whether or not they're a parent. So if they did that, the data shows that single moms are an overwhelming number of students at most community colleges. And if college presidents knew that, they might be more aggressive about finding some accommodations. And some colleges are good at that. But in terms of collecting this data, you know, the colleges are great at collecting equity and inclusion data and laying out the number of minorities or LGBTQ students that they have. And we see reports about that. But most schools do not collect data about whether or not they're parents. And if they did, they'd find out that single moms, actually the ones that have support in these good programs that you can find around the country, are, they graduate faster and they have higher GPA than non-parenting students. So, you know,
That's interesting.
It's fascinating. And it, one of the folks that we interviewed, or Melissa interviewed, said, this is the quote that killed me, which is, a college degree can break the cycle of generational poverty for seven generations. And the stories that, that Melissa and team told were so inspiring about what these women were up against and what these four particular community colleges did to make it easier for these women. And the other story that I'll tell you is, we did a documentary called Glory in Overcoming that we released last year about three women in Nashville that came out of the shelter system. And they, single moms, they all came from domestic abuse or homelessness or poverty. I mean, they had nothing. And they were introduced to a program that we did a piece on called the Goodwill Digital Career Accelerator. And that's a training program with Goodwill, Google, and Coursera partnering. And it provides certifications and gives them the digital skills to get them into these meaningful careers. And now all these women are working for Accenture and these big companies. The employers are thrilled with them. They're buying houses. They're inspiring their children. Their lives have been completely changed. But I'll add to it too, is that in this particular case, one of the reasons it's successful, and this is available all around the country, these programs, Goodwill committed to this, the success of these folks by providing them with help with housing, transportation, and childcare, because they knew that they wanted their students to graduate and have these life-sustaining careers, but there were certain obstacles in their way. And it's, you can find it on our Working Nation YouTube Inspires page. I dare you to watch Glory in Overcoming and not cry your eyes out. But the good news is, it was so moving that actually NBC Universal just had us cut a 30-second spot, which will be used around the country as a commercial for the next few months, which means we get a broader audience so more and more people can see what types of programs like this are out there.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's so great to hear that people are working together in various communities to really address the challenges that, that single moms face. And you mentioned some of the places that the women are getting jobs, and that sounds like it's related to another trend I'm wondering about, is, and that's women in STEM. And for quite a few years now, a lot of employers have been trying to support the concept of more women getting into tech, having the skill set to get into tech jobs. What are the trends there? Are women, is it just my wishful thinking, or are we seeing a lot more women getting into STEM activity?
Well, you know, Working Nation is built on storytelling, and it's built on putting a human face on what can be and what people can aspire to be. So, you know, it's one of the reasons that we do what we do, is to show, in this case, in Glory, these three women with very different backgrounds, who, one of which was in a call center in a company, and she just happened to ask one of her colleagues, or they were just talking about what they each got paid by the hour. And he got paid significantly more because he was in IT, and he was, and she's in a call center, and she just asked herself, well, could I do that? And started to look around, and not only could she is, and she's succeeding in it. So, you know, I think it is about the education process in this country.
Yeah.
You've seen it. We've seen it for years, right? With the coding camps and Girls Who Code, and companies really trying to inspire women to step into this space. And not only because they can, but because we need them in this space with millions of open jobs. We need, as women start to come back into the workforce at higher rates, which we hope, these are open opportunities where they do not have to go back to college. They can get a certification, or a credential that allows them to work for multiple companies. So we really try to inspire not just single moms, women in general, and anyone, to look at these jobs, because, you know, you mentioned AI earlier. technology and AI are changing the world of work and the future of work every single day. So if you don't understand that side of it, the technology side of it, then you're going to be left behind in most career sectors, or won't get to a level that you potentially could get to. So it's happening faster. You know, so much is happening. That's why I love talking to you, even if it's once a year, because, you know, it's happening faster than it ever has before in history. Yeah. As our founder, Art Bilger, always says, it is. And we need to help people keep up.
And it's sometimes daunting. I think it's sometimes scary for people, but there's so many programs and community colleges, by the way, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because there's so many options there, even if you just want one course to mm-hmm. kind of get in touch with what's been happening lately, if you're thinking about changing jobs or going back to work.
Right. Oh, there's a ton of courses. And, you know, I think we try to highlight and point to, you know, the fact that there's been this shift thanks to, it's been coming, but thanks in part to the Ad Council's Tear the Paper Ceiling campaign, which mm-hmm. which we might have talked about before, where companies are coming on board and saying, we are committing to hire people that don't have a four-year degree. And that is a really big deal for this country and for people that you're talking about. We don't need a four-year degree. And employers, and on LinkedIn, if you go into, you know, these job descriptions, they're very specific about what exact credential they need or certification they need. So, and oftentimes, you know, companies will hire them to upskill their people. But, you know, the information is out there, but you don't have to go back to college. And I never want to diss on a four-year degree or on colleges, but we have 40 million Americans who have had some college, but no degree. We have people that are, you know, in the justice system, and they're using, you know, internal systems to try to upskill and get closer to some credentials. We have, veterans and people with disabilities and lots of folks out there that are able to do the jobs that are out there. They just need to understand what the necessary skills or credentials are and how to get them. And in some cases, like the Goodwill program that I just told you about with these three women, that is free to most people. And when you start to find that stuff out and you realize you don't have to go back to school for 4 years, it brings a level of hope that we really need in this country for people that are desperately looking for jobs.
Yeah, it feels like this is aligned with, you know, what we always hope to have, which is the American way, way to integrate people into the best, robust parts of society and, you know, open doors so that everybody can go through. It's heartening to see that. So let me ask about these various programs. I am always kind of fascinated about how veterans are making their way into the civilian workforce. I read somewhere, I think probably your site, that each year more than 200,000 people leave the military and get into the civilian workforce, which is kind of mind-boggling when you think about an impact that big. Are they being able to recycle the skills that they had during their military service?
Yeah, it's getting a lot better. And Bev, you're hitting on my passion point as the daughter of a veteran and granddaughter of a veteran. So this is one topic I love to talk about, is how we translate the skills of our veterans who are coming out, and keeping in mind, some of them are coming out after a couple of years and some of them are coming out after having a career. I mean, we just did a short documentary about I think she's a Black Hawk pilot. I could be wrong on what aircraft it is, but, you know, 30-year career, flying in combat, mother of three. Her husband was in the military as well. He works for a nonprofit in the veteran space. She comes out, she's only 52 or 53 years old, and says, what do I do now? Like, these are the types of people that we're talking about. And so when we start to look at the military, and again, they, going back to, these are people that for the most part, don't have a college degree. Some of the officers do, but for the most part, they don't. They have skills in, you know, data and analytics and logistics, cybersecurity. They can move into law enforcement. There's lots of different and government jobs. You know, one of the biggest employers in our country is our government. So they can move into it. But there's been so much in the 6 years that Working Nation has been focused on veterans. We focused the entire month of November on it. There has been so much growth. You know, SHRM, who is the big HR group in the country, they have, you know, they come out every year with new information. LinkedIn comes out every year with new information on the data and where to get these men and women and their spouses into careers because they have the skills. And, you know, there's one program in particular that we love to highlight. It's called Task Force Management. Their chairman, Patrick Murphy, is just a rock star. We've interviewed him a bunch of times, and they started out their program just saying, okay, how do we get these veterans into the trucking industry? And they're still working with the current administration to fill, I think it's 80,000 open jobs just in that industry. But they are branching out now. So now they're in cybersecurity. Now they're in healthcare, and they're in every state. So there's programs that are available that help these men and women, you know, translate what their skills are, find their purpose. And there's great companies out there that historically the USAA is the Wells Fargo and Johnson & Johnson and others that Home Depot is a huge one that historically, you know, hire folks out of the military. But one of the big challenges for years was that people were coming out and they were taking jobs that were below their skill set. And because people didn't know how to translate what they had done. And we're seeing a real shift in that now that people are open to looking at everyone and saying, okay, you don't have a college degree. They're also looking at veterans and saying, okay, I don't necessarily know how to translate this particular thing on your resume, but tell me what it is that you're good at. And we need logistics people in this country. With the infrastructure bill and millions of jobs being created, there are perfect matches. And what I like to say is if veterans and employers, HR folks are having real conversations about what the business needs are, what the skills that they need are, we could probably have tens of thousands of great matches every year, which is great for business. It's great for families. It's great for our veterans. It's great for getting people to go into the military because now they know when they come out, they can get on a career trajectory that maybe they wouldn't have expected before, which they didn't know 10, 15 years ago. So, bottom line, it's also just great for our economy.
Yeah. Well, this also, I love the idea of looking at what skills do people really have and what can they do instead of what don't you have and why can't you be here. It has ramifications, I'm sure, for in addition to vets and to anybody who has had particular barriers like disabled workers and neurodivergent workers. It's true that employers are focusing on what it is people can do. Then the employers, you know, are getting something which they desperately need, which is people who can do the work. So that trend is continuing to grow, isn't it?
It is. It is. And this will be our third year focusing on folks with disabilities as a topic that is a really, really important topic in this country. It becomes bigger because people are feeling more comfortable disclosing their disabilities if they were not visible. You referenced neurodiversity, but if they weren't visible, people were very nervous. And more, we've had seen CEOs, we've seen celebrities, we've seen a lot of people start to come out and say, I have this issue too. And what the key for us is to show employers that these are possible employees that are able to do the jobs. There might need to be some accommodations made for some of these folks. And that's fine. But when you ask a company to make a small accommodation and they recognize they're going to get a loyal and hardworking and skilled employee, you know, we're seeing employees step into that. And we just released a piece on a company called Apex last week, and this blows my mind. They train and hire people that are visually impaired for cybersecurity. So what is a bigger threat in our country right now? And yeah, that's cyber. It's from a national security to our banks, everything. And there's 750,000 open jobs in cyber. So now all of a sudden, and we've gotten great response to it. It's on our Inspires page. We've gotten great response to it because all of a sudden we're looking at these folks and saying, you know, based on bias, I would have never considered that the visually impaired would be a great match for jobs in cybersecurity. And their training might look different, like it does in the piece. We show that. But it's not, like I said, it's not expensive or complex options for technology to get these people into the jobs. And they're thriving, and these businesses are thriving. So, I hate to use the term, it's a win-win, but in this case, we have a need, and these folks have the skills that are necessary. There's still great challenges for people within the space of disability, especially ones that have to deal with benefits and, you know, laws about how much they can work versus, you know, maybe they want to work more, but they can't, or they lose their benefits. There's transportation issues for this population. It's a complicated space, but it's also millions of Americans. And that number is growing, like I said, as more and more people come out and disclose that are a useful group of people to fill these 10 million open jobs in our country that we need filled.
Well, you've mentioned some of the jobs that are looking for people, trucking, cybersecurity. What other kinds of industries, what other kinds of parts of the country are you seeing jobs for in this year, 2024? Who's going to be doing the hiring?
Yeah, I mean, obviously technology is a big one. Manufacturing is still growing, and some of those jobs might look different, but it's still a growing area. Healthcare is a massively growing area. A lot of people left. We know the situation with nurses during COVID. A lot of people left the field. It got very hard during COVID. Just trying to make a doctor's appointment now, right? I mean, how long does it take?
See you
in 3 months. But not just, you know, I always say healthcare is not just about a white coat or a stethoscope. It's about, you know, the behind the scenes. It's about the logistics. It's about some of these supply chain companies. So companies and entrepreneurs that are building products and some of the pharmaceutical companies. There's so much that goes into that field. So that is a really big growing area. There's also the area of home healthcare workers, which is a very complicated one because of pay, and there's some, you know, union conversations going on around the country. But as we have an aging population, we need more people to care for them. And technology does help with that. It makes it easier for them to get, you know, updated information. But, you know, home healthcare is a really big focus and priority for our founder, Art Bilger. He said that since 9 years ago when I met him. But in that particular area, as I mentioned it, there are challenges because it's often low paying, very, very difficult work. But it's one that's growing as our population grows. The last thing is the millions of jobs, as I mentioned before, from the infrastructure bill. So and everybody thinks just like highways, but it's waterways. It's, you know, it's ag tech. It's all of these things. It's getting high speed internet to places. There are millions of jobs in every state that has been allocated money that are available in all types of areas. And also as we start to build out a lot of these jobs in the infrastructure space, there's the focus on, you know, being more environmentally friendly. So there's more green jobs, and we know our young people are really interested in having jobs that have purpose, and potentially they can say that something that they're doing for a living is good for our environment. So that's been a real focus for Working Nation as well, is, you know, what do those jobs look like? And I might have said it to you before, but you know, you could have a wind turbine company, but it doesn't mean that the accountant in that company that makes things run isn't a green job. So if you're into math and you want to be an accountant, but you still want to help the environment, you know, there's jobs out there that technically we like to say are good green jobs. So that's an area that I see growing as well.
Well, there's a lot of clean energy that is just kind of emerging. Some of it is making things more efficient. I think after the climate change assessment, the federal government put in another $5 billion or something on, or more than that, on electric infrastructure. There's all kinds of new types of energy, but much more efficient. Transmission would be a huge contribution to the energy picture. So we're seeing the whole energy sector in sometimes surprising areas. It feels like there's movement there, and it's something at least to learn about. And I guess that brings us, I just looked at the time, I guess that brings us to my final areas of question. I am a strong believer, as you know, that if you want to bring new energy to your career, if you want to be having more fun at work, if you want to make a change, whatever it is you aspire to in your career, it's important to keep learning. And I have been reading that employers are starting to recognize that they are are more often bringing learning into the workplace. Are you seeing that too?
Absolutely. It's such a positive thing to hear and to watch. And I also love to hear, you know, you say that people are hungry to learn, because that's really what it is all about, right? The success going forward, we all have to be, as we say, a working nation, lifelong learners. But it makes it a whole lot easier if you get into a company that is partnering with you on that and saying that we understand that upskilling our current workforce, you know, it's feel good. It makes them feel good, but it's also really good for our business. There's longevity and retention issues. So they don't, you know, the cost of turnover. It's really good for these companies to invest in their people. And they're looking into the future and they're seeing technology change or their machines change and saying, okay, this person that's doing this job, that job's going to go away, but this machine now we'll need someone to, you know, to repair it in a different way or program it in a different way. How do we take this loyal employee and train them for that job? And I'll tell you, we did a story on International Paper, which I honestly didn't know that much about, but they were highlighted in something called the American Opportunity Index. And we went home with this married couple. The woman actually had started as an intern at 16 at International Paper. Met her husband. He came to International Paper. I think they've both been there for over 20 years. And through their decades at International Paper, they were constantly offered upskilling, which brought them to promotions. They have a thriving family. And you know what? They love their company. They love their company because they know that their company is looking out for them. And you know, the ultimate outcome there, loyalty from your staff,
yes,
is a pretty remarkable thing. So we always say it's good for business, it's good for our economy, but it's also just great for the employee to get in there, to know someone wants them to be better, they can learn something new. And then, as I mentioned before, with credentials, a lot of companies are offering, you know, free programs to upskill. And it might not even be program, you know, credentials that are necessary in their company, but they're offering employees the opportunity to step in and learn something new. And that has been really fun for us to watch, because I think there's been a misconception that companies don't do that.
Yeah.
But more and more of them are doing it. I think for all the right reasons. And what the other positive outcome of that is, as those businesses stay strong, then those communities stay strong, because we know, you know, especially with small towns and certain areas, you know, the culture and the community is built oftentimes around who the biggest employers are. So, you know, building that culture, telling them we care about you, we want you to stay with us. Those are the stories we love to tell. And we hope that it inspires people to look differently at the places they're applying to. And there is data out there that shows about retention. Do they offer upskilling? These are questions that job seekers need to ask as they go in. And that information is out there. People would think it's not, but they get rated on it, you know, whether or not, you know, they're committed to the upskilling and reskilling of their staff. And it's something people should absolutely pay attention to when they're looking for jobs.
Well, when people are looking for jobs, trying to get a sense of what the job market is like, trying to get a sense of where the opportunities are and how they can, things they can ask for. I think Working Nation is a wonderful site. It's some sites you can go, like government agencies and things like that. You can get the statistics and things like that, but you don't get the story. So with Working Nation, I think it's so inspirational because, as you've described here, there are stories about real people who are changing their lives because of opportunities. And if you're feeling kind of bored or you think feeling kind of hopeless, go and look at Working Nation and see some of the things that are happening out there. It's always a pleasure to hear what you're up to.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's an exciting topic, and we really just hope to inspire people to find their purpose and find a career and generational changes and advancement can happen if we focus on our workforce, and that's what we really do day by day at Working Nation.
Today, we've been talking with media executive Joan Lynch about the state of American employment. This podcast is produced by WOUB Public Media. Adam Rich is our audio engineer. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that whatever your job may be, you will get more out of it if you keep looking for opportunities to learn something new. Thanks for listening to Jazzed About Work. Please come back soon.